sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. Patricia, a sexual authenticity coach and a Jersey girl turned Minnesotan, and I, Judy, a health educator, advocate, and podcaster, a lifelong Minnesota girl, get together and talk about sex. In all of its myriad of forms and flavors, we are going to pull topics out of our hats, grab items from the news, and take questions submitted by you, the listener. Because sex matter so much. Most of us can use a little help getting authentic with our sexual selves, and when we do, we all benefit. So we invite you to join us. Why? To remind us all, and perhaps better stated, help us know that sex matters. Period.
Welcome to another episode of Sex Matters. Period.
What?
It's crazy.
I love it. All right. Well, you can tell we're invested in this concept and this name of this podcast. All right. Well, we have a great topic today, and it starts with a question from a listener. Thank you,
Yay,
listeners.
We love questions from listeners.
We do. Send them in. All right. So I'm going to read the question, Patricia, and then we'll just dive in from there. All right.
Okay. Sounds good.
So this one starts out asking about sex and kids, which is always an interesting question. So, Yeah. All right. So how can you be sex body positive without being too sex body positive? And I think this is a line that a lot of people try to, like, what is this for? How does this work? So this question is coming from a mom. We didn't want our son to have any hangups about sex. So from a very early age, we tried to teach that all body parts were perfectly normal and fine. And we tend to walk around the house naked now that he's older, but still prepubertal. And he sometimes wants to poke my breasts in a teasing, non-sexual way and touch penis tips with his dad because it's funny. She says, we're trying to figure out how to explain that all body parts are normal, but some body parts are still kind of off limits in certain ways.
Good question. Yeah. Wow. Now, in that question, they don't specify exactly the age of the boy, right?
No, they don't.
The age of the child, no.
Right, okay. Just pre-pubertal. That's all.
Okay. So, first off, I want to just say that developmentally, things involving sex, it's going to fall a lot on the parent and the parent's ideology around sex, their own comfort with sex and the topics of sex and the way that they interact with each other. So children under, say, the age of 12, because we were establishing that 12 years old and over is considered the age of consent to sexual activity. So the age of consent at 12, that means that developmentally in their mind, they can understand the concept of someone else's body being off limits, that it's their domain and they have total control over their own body. But before that, developmentally, it's not really there. So they learn the most by example. They learn the most by watching interaction, by communicating through the senses, through touch, through what feels good, all of those kind of things. So it's not really appropriate to teach about consensual touching until 12 or 11, maybe 11, start introducing those concepts, but it would be extremely helpful to start talking about boundaries. We can instill boundaries in our children from the time they can understand and have a conversation. I had my grandson here last weekend, and we set up some pretty firm boundaries around when I had to go to the bathroom that he needed to wait outside. You know, my doors in my house don't have locks on them, and he just wanted to come barreling in. But I set up a boundary around the idea that I need to go to the bathroom. You don't need to come in here while I go to the bathroom. you can wait for me outside the door. And when I say you can come in, we're good. You know, a simple boundary that I do not expect him to be with me in the bathroom when I need to go. Mm-hmm. That boundary, of course, gets interesting when I'm alone with him in a McDonald's and I have to go and he has to go and we have to share a stall so that I make sure he doesn't get stolen. And so we have to tweak those things from here to there, you know, that kind of a thing. But boundaries are like putting up a split rail fence around some things that are important or valuable to you as a human being. It doesn't mean that the landscape can't change over time. It doesn't mean that you can't be flexible and take down one of the sections and allow somebody in if you choose to. But boundaries are really, it's not like building a wall. You don't want to build walls around sex and your children. Walls are immovable. Walls take a lot of work to take down. I'm talking about putting a boundary, something that's movable, something that's explainable, something that's a little more fluid. Till they get to 12 and when it's a little more age appropriate and they can understand domain, they can understand my body, I have my own rules, I have, you know. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm. It does. It does. And I like the way you're describing it, of the difference between a boundary and a wall, because I think that we have a lot of history. You know, I think in my family, walls were built up around sex and sexuality, right? And yeah, this person too. Sounds like she's trying to create that more of just the healthy, the boundary, but you know, it's a see-through fence, right? Like you can still know that then there's shifting and changing potentially and growth, right? And understanding that things shift over time, which is hard to do with a young kid. But yes, that makes a lot of sense. And like you said, explainable, right? To explain why is this okay now and that not okay. And it requires us to get very comfortable with our own sexuality. You know, I mean, even just like you're talking about going to the bathroom. I mean, sometimes that's a really like, how do you talk about that in your own family? And that can be a challenging thing to talk about and create boundaries around. So walls get created around that too, right? And then things feel bad or negative or wrong, or the kid feels like a bad person if they accidentally open the door or whatever, you know. And I understand from having a kid walk in on me and having that sort of panic and, you know, and things don't go well in that situation. But if you could communicate about it afterwards or whatever the case might be.
Well, so here, let me break that down even a little further using the bathroom example, because, and with my grandson being here. So some, you know, when I think of boundaries, I think of them like rules are even stronger than boundaries. So and then walls are stronger than rules. Mm-hmm. So like boundaries are thought of as marking off the limits around a property, you know, like they keep things out and they keep things in reference to psychological and mental health. This is where it's important, because you're establishing boundaries that allow for privacy. That's the boundary. The boundary is privacy. It's not that you don't want him to see your body. It's that there are things that you do in private versus secrecy. You know, like if you ran around and you kept him busy and then ran to the bathroom only when he was not paying attention to you out of secrecy so that he doesn't see you naked or he doesn't see you go to the bathroom, that's not setting a boundary. That's managing a situation. But setting boundaries is healthy, because now I've set up this umbrella for privacy that's important to me and important for him to understand. So actually maybe the rule is that when I go to the bathroom, he's not to enter the bathroom, but going to the bathroom is not the bad part. You know, it's not that I'm going to be in there naked and going to the bathroom and all that kind of stuff. It's more about allowing me to have some private time. Now, when you're talking about the lady that wrote in, I love the idea of them wanting to be body positive and not putting shame on body or body parts. Perhaps the boundary around that is, gosh, let's think about that, because it could come back to a couple different things. It could be, obviously, she's not saying privacy because she's allowing herself to walk around freely naked and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So that's not the value that she's looking at. What's the value outside of the principle? That's what I want to know. Can you have any ideas?
Well, would it be, so she's talking about in these particular things, she's talking about him poking her breasts mm-hmm. in a fun way and touching penis tips with his dad.
Yeah.
So if they're okay with it, and maybe the boundary is to be able to
communicate.
I'm wondering, is it the, I don't want him touching my breasts now, or it's not an appropriate time, or maybe she's feeling that's just not okay anymore, whatever, but she wants to be able to have him not do that. This is my guess anyway, in a very productive way. So it's not that he's bad. It's not that her breasts are bad. It's not that anybody's wrong. It's that setting up that boundary that this right now isn't okay. So does that boundary then, does that walk into consent? And would that be the slight definition there? The boundary.
That's kind of where I was going with it, is teaching the idea of consent through boundary. I mean, because you're gonna either say yes or no, and that's what he'll understand, a hard answer. If she's trying to approach from a place of self-discovery, the way that he'll respond to that is if she says, ow, that hurts, or she makes it sensitive, or the father doesn't engage in the play and turns away and is just like, nope, I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. That is more impactful because it's their choice. They're exuding choice and their own boundaries by not participating.
Right.
Versus saying it's bad or saying it's wrong or telling him he's disgusting or,
right.
you know, or thinking that he has a behavior problem or something like that. It's really just about ignoring the behavior or voicing how it makes you feel. So communicating body language or with words.
Right. I'm thinking of, say, the dad situation where the kid, you know, and who knows kind of how this looks around their house, right? When the dad and the kid are running around, and you know, naked, whatever their situation
running
is
around
after
naked,
shower,
yeah.
whatever, right? And
sounds like a fun house to me.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And so the kid wants to do, you know, he's engaging in whatever he sees as this play, and the dad doesn't want to, but if the dad turns away, that could be read as too, could that be read as too harsh? And is there a way to say, hey, you know, I know that we do that sometimes, but now isn't the time, kind of thing?
I don't know that, because that almost sounds like a mixed message to me.
I'm just trying to figure out how to make the body language sort of friendly, but clear.
Gosh, you know, this is really going to sound bad, but I'm flashing back to my dog training, because positive reinforcement is always good. You can always encourage the child to live in his greatness. So you can positively say, you know, I love that we can be free in this space together. And, you know, you have your body and I have my body, but it really makes me feel extra good when you choose not to poke my boob. Mm. So positive reinforcement,
right.
Reinforcing the good things. And again, we want to be careful to label things good or bad, because our bodies are neither. They just are. It's the intent behind it, because he's not intending harm.
Right.
He's not intending to be sexual. So it really, he is really just coming at it from a childlike place, like a pet. And I know that sounds bad. Please don't send me hate mail or anything like that. But at that level, at his developmental level, you can either reinforce the positive or you can use negative, or you ignore. Those are the choices. Mm-hmm. So acknowledging, it really, parenting is tough.
Yeah.
It's really hard to know exactly what to do. And I really do like to believe that we do the very best we can with what we're given. And it sounds like she's being very conscientious. I think when you take your body and you put it into somebody else's space, it's a very vulnerable place. So she probably just wants him to feel love when he touches her, or when they're touching, even when it's playful. Mm-hmm. Because when we're dressed, a kid can climb all over us and poke us all over the place or whatever. But if it hurts, we're still going to say it hurts, right? So whether you have clothes on or you don't have clothes on, if he does something that you don't like, you can choose to ignore the behavior. You can choose to say, ouch, or stop, or no. Or you can choose to do positive reinforcement for something that's better.
Right.
Those are the options. Here's another example is, say, like pregnant women. How many times do people walk up to pregnant women and just put their hands all over their bellies because they think they can? Mm-hmm. What do? You either ignore it, you say, please don't do that, or you're like, you indulge in the fact that maybe it's a grandma or something and she just wants to sense the life that's inside of there. So you just kind of make it okay, like through ignorance, or just go with it and then bitch about it later. It really comes down to how you feel in your own body, how it makes you feel. Being poked in the boob is not, I don't like being poked in the boob.
Right. Yeah. No, I can definitely say that it would probably be for me, it would be an uncomfortable thing potentially. Yeah.
I used to, my ex-husband used to walk past me and flick my tit.
Oh, geez.
He'd walk by and just flick it underneath, from underneath. And it was so degrading and humiliating. And it made me feel just really yucky.
Yeah.
So to teach a kid not to do that isn't a bad thing.
What was his intent with that?
Just to be an asshole. No, I think he was objectifying me.
So it's an interesting thing when you hear, like, I could imagine. Mm-hmm. That somebody would hear that and say, oh, he was just teasing you, right? And right. And kind of that childish boy thing, right?
Like the boy poking his mom's boob.
Right. Well, I wouldn't even say that. I would say more of the third grader poking the third grader in general. Like just,
immature.
Picking on, that somehow, yeah. That's not a sense of humor that I enjoy.
Nope. It's almost bullying.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It doesn't feel good. And I don't mind, that's a physical, to me, it's a physical teasing that you shouldn't have to put up with. You don't like, if you don't like it, like you say, it's degrading. I totally get that. I don't think you should also have to put up with somebody sort of mentally teasing you either. I just don't love that. And I know some people, that's how they show affection and stuff. And so it's just hard, because to me, it's akin to that kind of thing, yeah. Right? It feels icky and yeah. So it's just an interesting thing. And I think the pregnant belly is interesting too. It's like somehow all of a sudden your belly becomes everybody else's property because there's a housing a baby in there. Never understood that.
So what about, okay, is there, let's flesh this out, you and me, because there's got to be a way for her or him to be able to say no without it being about the body shaming.
Right.
Right. So aren't there ways to flex our boundary muscle where we stay in our power in our body, because it is our vessel. It does not belong to him. It doesn't belong to anybody else. It's ours, right? This is our powerhouse. Mm-hmm. So isn't there a way to say That's funny, but it doesn't work for me.
Well, and right. And it did at one point, right? Like, it sounds like both of these things were
have happened at least once.
Right. And it sounds like, well, here, let me read the and touch penis tips with his dad because it's funny. So my guess is that something that has happened that's been okay, right? Like, I mean, I'm just saying it in
what
some
about,
level.
What about saying something along the lines of, this isn't about you, it's about me. I'm thinking, what if they said something along the lines of, that's uncomfortable, not making it about them, or, you know, just stating a fact.
Mm-hmm.
Or the abstinence, like I said, the just not doing anything at all says a lot. It's not a shame thing. It's just like carrying on and you just walk like it didn't even happen. And so the, you know, he wants to touch penis tips with his dad and the dad's like, excuse me, I got to go, you know, do X, Y, or Z. And he just keeps walking and he can laugh and giggle. It'll be about how he carries himself, but not engaging in the actual behavior. Mm-hmm. Or what if the family set up a word, like a safe word? This is interesting. This is a good, this just came to me in my head. What if there, as a family, when something isn't going so great, even in their, when they're dressed or whatever, if something is not going great, they use a word like lava or pineapple or whatever. And it's just a word that creates a reset,
mm-hmm.
where the kid just has to stop and think for a second and then they can go about their business. And if they set that up outside of their nakedness, outside of the privacy of their home, then it can easily be transferred into these situations.
Right.
That's a possibility.
Yeah. No, that is, I think that's a great idea in life in general. And I'm
we
just thinking
safe words. We all need safe words. Words.
Yes.
Even in relationships, like when we're starting a new relationship or something and you go out for your first couple drinks and you start talking to the guy, maybe you have, or a girl, and you have some things that are just uncomfortable for you. Even if you just said in the first date, hey, you know, if I ever say the word pineapple, it just means not really ready to talk about that right now, or we'll come back to it later, or it's off the table. You know, almost like just setting up safe words for red, yellow, green.
Right.
Red, yellow, green. The colors. Red means go. Red means stop. Green means go, and yellow means maybe. So maybe in a family situation, if they're playing and the mom is comfortable with what he's doing, she doesn't have to say anything. Or if it's getting questionable, she says yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's something that she really feels uncomfortable with in her own body, she says red.
Right.
And it might just be something that relates better to a child, the color system.
Right.
And could be used and is communicating. It's communicating wants, needs, feels.
Right. And letting the person know, hey, something's up, but not so much about the judgment in the moment.
Right.
Or, you know. Yeah. Well, and I'm thinking as a child ages, so they're being body positive.
Yeah.
And then as you get older, your boundaries get a little different, right? So this is a different, the penis tips and then touching mom's breasts, different than when the child is 4, when the child is 8, when the child is 12, when the child is 15, right?
Right.
But these things change over time. And how do you gently change the child with time and with age without it being a bad thing, a negative thing, especially when you have had sort of free reign? Like if you're growing up in a house where everybody is allowed to be naked and maybe touching each other isn't a big thing, it's not sexual, so whatever. And then
you go to high school.
Right. Or
and
even
you
just
have to share a locker room or take a shower with a bunch of guys and you decide to start playing penis sword in the shower, you're going to get pummeled.
Right. And so how do you do that with the yeah, it is bringing in that, how do you change that with age when it's comfortable and it's fine because it's fine, when you're younger, but then, you know, and I don't, I mean, I don't know if I had kids, I don't know if I would, I don't know if I would be like, okay with playing penis sword with them. I guess I don't know about penis, so I'm the wrong person to ask, but I don't know.
Or how comfortable you, yeah.
Yeah. You know, them, maybe if you're, especially when they're younger, if they touch your breast, whatever, not a thing, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about people who breastfeed until they're, you know, their kids are 4 or 5 years old.
Right. Right.
You know, those kids don't see your breasts as a part of your body. They see them as a milk truck. They see them as a self-soother, that by sucking on your breast, they are going to feel better. They are going to be pacified.
Right. So, and then they don't have access.
And they have to learn at some point that it's shut off, that this is no longer. And how do they do that?
Right.
What people who do this, the state of being, which is the breastfeeding until the child no longer wants, that's kind of the, it's kind of the ignorance thing. It's kind of like, well, it's just there and we go about our business and I don't make a big deal out of it. And, you know, if it's an acceptable thing, if we're able to do it, great. If we're not, we're not. And then they lose interest over time and it goes away. Mm-hmm. But will they be obsessed with breasts the rest of their life? Perhaps. Who knows? Intent. It all comes back to intent. So,
because you want to do it. I mean, I can totally see her perspective of wanting to do this in a positive way so that it doesn't, it isn't like the kid isn't having to process through a negative, well, wait a minute, this hasn't been an issue up till now. Why is it an issue up now? And not have the language for that, right? Like, yeah. If they
That's
could.
That's why I think that it has to be something that's established in normal, everyday living, like their normal routine, mm-hmm. that can be transmuted into their private life, that they can just take a concept.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's consistent, because kids need consistency, right? They need to know that some things are a straight line. And even if it's a piece of thread that kind of wiggles a little bit, they still need to know that it's connected. So the idea of having a communication concept that allows a child to know when things are okay or not okay, or not the right time, or I mean, because you could use the red, yellow, green example in lots and lots of different ways. And then, like I said, it's just a concept. It's not associated with just the body. It's not just what I say when I'm naked and make him say stop, or, you know, red and scream it at him. Mm-hmm. You know, how it's delivered is probably a big part of it too.
Right. Now that makes sense. And yeah. And let's talk about, as we're talking about kids aging a little bit, as they get older and, you know, and then end up dating or going, having relationships or being around people of the opposite sex, or we start to become sexual beings, where when you think of, you know, the rough and tumble kids, right. And then all of a sudden they grow up and the girls all of a sudden have different boundaries. Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah. Where does that kind of shift over into the boundaries, to the consent, to the, you know, and are those things kind of intermingled? I'm thinking about this too. One of my friends had a birthday party with her 10-year-old and they had water guns. And she said they spent the whole day, because some of the kids didn't want to be sprayed in the face or whatever the case might be, right? And yeah. So she says, yeah, half the day was no consent, 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 get consent before you do that to somebody else. Yeah. And I think that's
at 10. So remember, right. This is because developmentally, consent is not a concept that they really get. It's still a yes or no at that age. They're trying to understand. They know there's consequences, but they don't really get the idea of personal domain until they're at around the age of 12.
Okay. Yeah.
So at 12 is a really good age to start having conversations around consent and moving it, because that's the beginning of the hormonal the prepubescent thing is really kicking into high gear, the changes will start happening in their bodies hormonally and psychologically and stuff, male, female, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it moves, then the needle moves, because not only then do you have consent, but you have the concepts of privacy versus secrecy.
Right. I thought that you brought that up. That was, I was thinking about that when you said that. I thought that was a really, also really important distinction, mm-hmm. that I think can get messed up in, yeah. that whole trying to have privacy, and privacy ends up being secrecy, and the kids pick up on that. Like, I can think of things when I was a kid that should have been private and not secret.
Yeah.
And I took that in, you know.
And you hold it inside. There's a guilt about it that, right. carries through your entire life.
Right.
When we keep secrets. Vaulting secrets is detrimental to our psyche. We're not meant to be vaults. We're meant to be expressive. It's not holding on to secrets. I mean, it's a huge part in mental health, mm-hmm. huge part in spiritual health. So you think a huge part in sexual health. Think about people, shifting away from the kids, or I could even say with kids stumble across porn. Mm-hmm. And they keep it a secret because they know that there's judgment around it.
Right.
Right. So then it's a secret, and then it gets fostered. The secret gets special space, special rumination in the mind, because it has to be kept on lockdown.
Right.
There's the box it has to stay in, and it's considered naughty or bad or not acceptable, or I wouldn't look at this in front of my parents, or, you know, there'd be judgment. So fear of judgment starts all the way back.
Well, even just finding it, running, like you say, running across, mm-hmm. it, finding somebody else's, and I think the bathroom example is also a really good one.
Yeah.
Because I think that is one of those things that sometimes it's about, it comes off as secret, mm-hmm. as opposed to private. And that messes with your own head about your own bathroom stuff,
right?
Yeah. And so then it becomes bad and embarrassing instead of, I've seen some really good examples around people having healthy boundaries around that, and their kids being able to speak. So as a kid, I was always embarrassed. I saw that as secretive, not private or personal, right?
Right.
And I can remember situations where I didn't feel well, and intestinal issues came up, and I didn't feel like there was any way I could express it because it was secret, right? As opposed to a friend of mine's kid who was having some stomach issues, and she was just a very able, and I was just like in awe of her because she was like 10, and I'm like, oh my God, I wouldn't have been able to like do this. I would have been freaking out because I wasn't home with my mom in my own space. I would have been panicked, mm-hmm. where she was like, oh, I don't feel well. And I'm, you know, she was not disgustingly or rudely descriptive. She just stated her problem, and she was like, I'd like to lay down. And I was like, oh my gosh, look at that self-advocacy that kid's got going on. And I was just so impressed because I was like, just so, my God, when I think of situations when I was a kid, I was embarrassed. And for me, having stomach issues or not feeling well was sort of more of the, you are wrong for that, rather, yeah. than you need to, it's something we need to deal with. Or
because, you know, we were supposed to be seen, not heard. We right. were a generation that was raised that we were not supposed to be an issue or draw attention to ourselves, or our needs were not as important as those of everybody else's.
Right. And I remember a time, this sticks with me as clear as the moment we were in their house and this happened. I'm telling you, man, I went to the bathroom. It took me a while. I was not feeling well again. Feeling very secret, didn't know what to say, it wasn't even like, mom, can I talk to you on a side? It was just, keep your mouth shut. Took me a while to get back. Their bathroom was like down a long hallway. And I came back, and the woman who we were eating dinner at her home, she said, it took you a little while in there. It took you a while or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she didn't say it accusatorily at all. Like she, the tone is probably pretty accurate to what it should have been for being neutral. But my mind, I panicked because I was like, uh-oh, it was bad that I was in the bathroom long. Oh no. And I ended up like having this panic that she thought I stole something, like that I was actually back there in her bedroom or something. Mm. And I couldn't just say, oh, my stomach is feeling icky. Right. Mm. So it was just, it's just weird. Like, obviously I remember that, but I felt, I worried about that for days.
And then I'm actually having like a little bit of a flashback to kids are kids, just kind of like what you're saying. As parents, we can do the very best we can while we're raising them. And then we think when they become teenagers that we can rationalize with them or that they get these concepts and that they will honor and respect them at all times. And guess what? Not the case, because they're constantly testing the boundaries as teenagers, constantly testing where your lines are and if you hold your boundaries in your space or if they can break through the fence, or maybe that's where the walls start to get built because they keep pushing and pushing and pushing the boundaries. Mm-hmm. If you're not strong in your own boundaries as a parent, especially around sexuality, the teenage years are really going to be a challenge. Because there will either be secrecy or there will be unhealthy things going on with them emotionally or mentally or physically. I mean, because if they're doing things in secrecy, that opens the gateway for unplanned pregnancies, for all kinds of things that can happen. And I know that they're taught about some stuff at school. We just had this conversation before that, you know, adults need to have a revamped version of what sex ed is, because kids today, I really would love to just, I think I'm going to pursue my local high school and see if I can talk to their health teacher and look up what the curriculum is in Minnesota. I'd really love to know how exactly they're delivering this information to teens or even prepubescents, or where the diversity and inclusion is being interjected at various times. Is it being done in an assembly program? Is it being done, intermittently throughout a school year with a handout here or there? I mean, like, how are they introducing the different concepts of LGBTQ or the idea of body image and body acceptance and harassment and male and female toxicity? I mean, how are they interjecting this kind of information? Because a lot of kids are getting taught this stuff from their parents and or from the news or from Facebook or whatever else, and they're developing their own rogue thoughts on this stuff, where if they had boundaries and consent really nailed down at a younger point in their life, that the other things would make much more sense, you know?
Right.
And the boundaries of being owning your own body, and that your body, the beautiful body shaming, not body shaming picture that this mom is trying to present, if she does that in conjunction with boundaries and in conjunction with consent, she's going to have a very well-rounded, grounded individual growth going into his sexuality, who's able to communicate, who's able to stand in his power and know, you know, what consent means to his body, therefore what it means to somebody else's body. You know, mm-hmm. I think it would just foster a healthier situation.
Well, and I think even the concept of being able to understand boundaries enough to say, I'm sorry for crossing them, right?
Like, oh, apologizing.
I think, right. Well, because I think of, oh my gosh, Judge, the whole Judge Kavanaugh thing, right? Mm-hmm. The thing that there was a lot of things, obviously, but I think one of the things that I thought was fascinating that of course got called out a lot on media, but I think it's an interesting thing to have a discussion with as a parent with your kids, if the age appropriateness is there, is when the moms were all sitting there, these, I believe, and I say this only because I believe it was the headline was Christian moms sitting there and said, well, what 15-year-old boy hasn't done this, or however old he was? Mm-hmm. And the, oh my goodness, wait a minute. And you know, and I saw news people going, wait a minute, me? I didn't do this, yeah. You know? And other people in that I had that conversation with who commented on that, men who were saying, I'm not comfortable being thrown in that category because I did not do that as that age. And I am very concerned to think you think it's okay that your kids do. And mm-hmm. I don't want my child to think that this is okay. So I'm curious to know how many conversations that started that were really potentially very positive, you know, that turned out positive, because I thought that was a great example of watching people sort of panic, but it brought, like I said, brought up some really good things. And I think being able to have your kids say, no, I'm not, that's not how I operate in the world, and that's not okay, and why, and oh my gosh, I crossed the line, and to feel not shame, because I mean, that's part of it, is when you do cross the line, even if you feel bad, there's a weird, yeah, we don't sometimes know how to go back. And
it's the assumption of guilt because you did something wrong. Okay, guilt is different than shame. Shame is something we feel whether we did or didn't do something. It's something that's more imposed on us from our parents, our religion, whatever. Guilt is what we feel as a result of something we did. Mm-hmm. So they're two very different words. And guilt, you know, if you cross somebody's boundary and you make somebody feel bad, or, you know, you go too far and you make a mistake, the ability to apologize, like you said, and ask for forgiveness is one thing, but there's so much that's learned in the family, because then you have to be able to let it go. Mm-hmm. Accepting, if somebody says that they forgive you, to be able to accept the forgiveness genuinely and let it go.
Well, and I would also add into that, being able to talk about it so that somebody understands mm-hmm. how that boundary was crossed. Because right. I think sometimes that's also a conversation that's challenging, is somebody crosses a boundary, but then there isn't the ease, it, you know, it's a challenge to get back in and go, and to understand how did I cross the boundary? What part was crossing, what wasn't okay. Well, you know what I mean? I mean, sometimes a person is pushing to cross a boundary. Sometimes it's truly not meant. And how do you get back to be able to talk about that trust. Well with each other?
Trust.
Right.
Big word. And then, you know, so we've talked about young children. We've talked about the teenage children. Now I want to talk about our adult children, because mm-hmm. they're children. They're still children. They're still learning. Their brains are still developing until they're 25 or 26 years old. So if you have a child living at home still, which is happening a lot these days, mm-hmm. that millennials are living at home with their parents, by choice or by not, whatever, they are still childish. They still are learning how it all works. And they're learning a lot from your interactions with them. However, they grow balls, boys or girls, it doesn't matter. They get some sort of ability to exert their own, you know, flex the muscles. Oh, but this is my life, you know, whatever. But don't you think for 1 minute that they're not all up in yours? They're watching everything you do. So childhood doesn't end at 18 anymore. Childhood really ends at like 25. Mm-hmm. And that's usually when we see our children turn a corner. And I say usually developmentally, they turn a corner where they start to really step into adulthood and understand that you've done the best that you can with what you had for their good. Or as a parent, you're just a person and you're trying, you know, where they have the understanding of being outside of themselves. So just keep that in mind, because just because they're adults at 18 does not mean they're not still children. They're still learning a lot from 18 to 26. They learn a lot with social media. They learn a lot about their voice and how to, what they should say, what they shouldn't say, how they should say it, venting, expressing anger, what privacy means to them, what their time is valued at, how their energy affects other people, how and what words to use that are effective, things that they've probably learned from you as a parent, how to communicate, what healthy communication is. And all of this from the age of infancy to 25, all of it impacts their sexuality and who they'll be at 40 or 60.
Right. And that's where the word boundaries is so valuable, in that flexibility and shifting and growing and changing and learning new things and integrating new things. And I like you say, you know, the whole, we have this idea that, yeah, when you're 18, somehow you know everything, like you should. Well, you shouldn't be doing that anymore. You're, you know, how old are you? You're 19 years old. And it's like, you know, you've had this one life until you're 18. And then there's this whole nother life that happens after you're magically 18 that you're then learning to live real life. So there's a lot of stuff going on. And depending on what your first 18 years was like, now all of a sudden you have this experiential thing going on that you then have to integrate, right? Like, you know, so yeah, it is an interesting thing. We're trying to find ourselves and figure out who we are. And then we have these new freedoms that we're working with.
So here's what I want to say to kind of wrap this up. This wonderful woman who's trying to be so body positive and sexually conscious of how to raise her son, she has a lot of years to go to correct. If she does something that doesn't seem like it's working, or she feels like maybe she shouldn't have done that down the road, as the child comes into more of a cerebral learning, more of the ability to understand the concepts outside of consequences, she'll be able to write the sail. She'll be able to write the path. It's not, you should never look at it as too far gone. There's always opportunities to grow as a parent and to grow as a child. So there's no right or wrong. Just do your best and just watch your intent. That is, those are the things. The intention of the child right now is to be a child, and it's very self-driven because children are very egotistical. Everything is about them. So it's not really, we can't expect their intent to be anything else. But us, we have the responsibility to teach about intent, you know, to by example, until they're old enough to understand what that means. Intention is a concept that's hard for people to understand even into their 20s. You talk about intention to a teenager and it's like some weirdo word. It's like a new agey thing. So it's not really, it's not something that applies to them. So it's something they learn.
That's interesting, actually. I remember having a very thoughtful thought process about the word intention when I was in my teens that got me to think a lot about intention. And somebody had said when something had happened, they said intention doesn't matter. Like they were like, it doesn't matter. It's only the outcome matters. Intention doesn't matter. And I sat with that a lot in thinking about what that meant and came to the conclusion that their intention definitely plays a very, very, very big part. Back to just, I want to say this, as you're talking about, you know, kids just are being kids. And it is an interesting thing to think about. Like, I don't know what's going through this kid's head, but I can imagine, like you say, the kid's job is to be the kid. So the kid's job is poking mom's boob. It's fun. It's probably a way he's been close to her in the past.
Or a way to get attention.
Right. And maybe food. And the dad, you know, it's probably another way to bond with dad, right? The whole, if this is not a new penis touching thing, right? Penis tip touching. So it's been fun. It's been a way to bond. You feel close. And so shifting those rules or shifting that whole thing is a, I'm glad she's being really thoughtful and intentional about it, because I could see that being a pivotal time.
I can add just another little thing that just popped into my brain. Think about the way, and it's not happening as much right now because they've gone to more gender inclusive toys and stuff, but think about naturally how boys grow and play. And oftentimes you see that they're either mechanical or they have a little bit of an aggressive side. They want to play with guns. They want to play with swords. They want to do all that sort of stuff. And here's this little kid who's got a natural apparatus hanging from him that looks like it could be a gun or a sword. And so he wants to go to town and, you know, ta-da, here's my sword. And he's probably using his imagination in a way that is very stimulating to him in more ways than one. So, I mean, a lot of times children do things that feel good too. So just keeping it in the context of him being a child. And understanding that he will have to learn the concept of domain at some point. And right now, it's really about communication and how to communicate consistently, whether you're naked or you're dressed, that something is positive or negative or okay or not okay, or you're walking a line or something, to just alert them to reset and think, oh, well, wait a second. Maybe I should change directions and do something else. Mm-hmm. Non-offensively, non-shamefully. I don't know. Sex matters, period. What can I say?
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
That's why we talk about this stuff, because it matters.
That's right. Well, exactly. And how awesome is it that she is thinking about that?
I think that's phenomenal. And I just want to give her a huge kudos.
Right.
Yay. Yes. And I hope we were helpful. We batted that around quite a bit.
But I think it is a big thing with kids. How do we find this balance? And I think it's a great question. I think it's a great topic. And people who are trying to raise their kids not in the way we were raised mm-hmm. are really trying to figure out how do you do it and how do you not do it too much? Like, how do you not overcorrect?
The pendulum swings back and forth, right? And then when it goes too far one way or the other, it's got to come back to center. So we just really need to be able to balance.
So yay. And yeah, I hope we were helpful. And to question asker person, you know, if they do hear this and there's any follow-up or they want to say my kid is X years old or whatever.
Comments.
Yeah, exactly. Feel free to do it on the podcast itself or to bring it in as another question or a follow-up. And if you come up with any brilliant ideas or anything that we've said works, and feel free to share that too.
Yeah, we love questions. So please send them in.
All right. This is good.
Till next time, right?
Till next time.
Sex matters. Don't forget. Period.
Sex matters. Period.
Yeah. What?
What?
I think we need to stick that what at the end of our sex matters. What?
What?
Yeah. All right. Well, till next time, Judy, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. Till next time, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
You can find all the episodes of the Sex Matters podcast at sexmatterspodcast.com. That is where you can ask a question, get on the email list, or leave a review. When you get on the email list, you will get a PDF of daily positive sex affirmations from Patricia. Find us on iTunes, where you can also, and we would love if you would leave a review and a rating. And thank you so much to those of you who have already done that. We really do appreciate it. Consider supporting our work on Patreon, and you can get there through the webpage through the Become a Patron button. Thank you so much. Support the podcast by sharing it as well. You can certainly share it on your Facebook page, but to address somebody's concern, you can also share it in a private message or forward the emails. A huge thank you to the mom who sent in the question for today's show. We really appreciate it. Please do consider sending in your questions or scenarios or news stories or whatever you want us to tackle and discuss. It's always nice to know what you out there in listener land are thinking and wondering about. You can find Patricia's main website at thepowerexchange.co. That's .co. Find out what she's doing, about her classes, and how to work with her individually. You can also find her on Facebook as well. Check out her book and story that explains how she got into the work she's doing today, called Crossing the River Called Suffering. You can find it on Amazon. Link right to it through our website. And you could connect with me with my Health and Wellness Weekly podcast, the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, at wellnessrenpodcast.com. You can also find it on iTunes. I had the thought that it would be fun to leave you with the joke, since we were talking about kids and the playfulness that the mom is talking about that they are trying to shift, but nonetheless is at the bottom or the root of where she's coming from. So I thought I would find a few jokes, and I managed to come upon an article called The Best Dirty Jokes You Can Tell Your Kids. And actually, along with the jokes come some thoughtful ideas and concepts around the jokes and how they can be beneficial to not only can kids see the incongruencies and see the humor, but it also helps sometimes teach normalcy. So just a couple jokes. I will post the website on the notes page as well, but to leave you with a couple jokes that you can actually share with your kids. I'm not saying these are great. I'm just saying they are jokes. The first one, why did the cop sit in the toilet? To do his duty. Why did the ketchup blush? Because he saw the salad dressing. What did the elephant say to the naked man? How do you breathe through that thing? And one last one, and there are more. I swear I haven't read you them all. A wife sent her husband a romantic text message. She wrote, "If you are sleeping, send me your dreams. If you are laughing, send me your smile. If you are eating, send me a bite. If you are drinking, send me a sip. If you are crying, send me your tears. I love you." Her husband texts back, "I'm on the toilet. Please advise." All right, that's it. We'll see you next week. Have a great one.